Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to visit with the full-time support chaplain for the Minnesota National Guard for our annual Chaplain's Christmas Special. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
People across our state look to a minister of some kind to refresh them and guide them in their decisions. In the Minnesota National Guard, we look to our chaplain corps to provide ministry to our service members, no matter what their choice of religion is. Chaplains serve as advisors to commanders on unit morale, ethical climate, and the state of morals within the unit. Chaplains are a tool in the mental wellness kit for our service members and veterans. They have been there in some of the darkest times to help service members find a spiritual way to relook at the situation in front of them. I encourage veterans to tap into religious leaders as a means to heal the spiritual and mental wounds of war.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the full-time support chaplain for the Minnesota National Guard, and he also serves as the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division chaplain on the weekends. It's Chaplain Lieutenant Colonel Buddy Wynn. Chaplain, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Merry Christmas, happy holidays to you and all of our listeners.
And sir, I have to congratulate you. Since I've seen you last, you got promoted from Major to Lieutenant Colonel.
Yeah, they'll promote just about anyone if they can pin Lieutenant Colonel on me. There's hope for everyone.
I'll bet you had some help from above, sir.
Help from above, from a praying mother and a wonderful wife and supportive family and a great chain of command.
Chaplain, we want to talk about Christmas and some issues surrounding that today. But first, I'd like to share with our listeners a little bit of your background. You started out as a private.
I did. I enlisted in the Minnesota National Guard in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, Sergeant First Class Dave Meyer. Talked me into enlisting. Actually, it was my dad, who at the time was, I think, an Army captain promotable. And this is just what our family did. He and his three brothers, his sister, both of his parents, all Army officers, in fact. And so I went down the enlisted road, like many of them started out, and went off to spend some time on active duty during the Gulf War. I was in Korea for 15 months, spent almost 3 years at Fort Drum, New York, and then came back and entered the National Guard and did that job full-time and also in a traditional capacity for a number of years, moving up to the rank of Sergeant First Class. And my last job was as a 13 Bravo cannoneer, as a gunnery sergeant in a field artillery battery, one of the best jobs in the Army. Shortly after September 11th, I got a call. I was working at my church at the time, just a traditional guardsman. And the person at the other end of the phone said, you know, hey, we think you'd make a good chaplain. And my wife really validated kind of that call to the chaplaincy. And I went to seminary and got a session into the chaplaincy, deployed to Iraq, spent a year there. And then later on deployed to Kuwait for 9 months. And in the spring of 2013 was hired full-time as the chaplain, working on General Nash's staff, which is a tremendous honor. So In the spring, it'll be 29 years complete, and the time has just flown by. It's a great honor to do this job and provide for the needs of our soldiers and airmen and their families.
And Chaplain, you kind of followed in your father's footsteps somewhat, didn't you?
I did. And so you mentioned the promotion, which is a great honor, and to have him sitting in the front row on the day that we did the pinning ceremony was kind of a tough experience because, he and my grandfather, both retired lieutenant colonels, are giants in my life. You know, they're the pantheon of leadership and integrity and courage. And so I don't feel that I'm fit to stand at that level in terms of rank. So they continue to inspire me every day. My dad's in a new season of his life, transitioning out of a full-time ministry employment, taking his passion for customer service back into the business world. And he says, I can't work six Saturdays and a Sunday in retirement. So he's refiring, not retiring. And I still take inspiration from both of them.
Chaplain, one of my favorite memories was we had a dinner and we needed a chaplain following an event, and we had a tag team chaplain. You and your father both helped us that night.
I remember that fondly. And as time has gone on and I've been in this job, I've called on him as a teammate because he's a pastor. He's been in the ministry almost 30 years now. So, always great to work together with your old man.
Chaplain, today we want to talk about the real meaning of Christmas and how it affects our service members and their families and what it's like to be deployed and to have some of your freedoms taken away from you. And I want to just read from a short article that I saw, and was talking about what is the real meaning of Christmas? Is it the gifts under the tree, the lights in the windows, the cards in the mall in the mail, turkey dinners with family and friends, snow in the yard, stockings hanging in the living room, shouts of Merry Christmas to those who pass us in the streets? And this article goes on to state that for some, Christmas is a time of sorrow because they aren't surrounded by family. They aren't able to be home. Sometimes they're deployed. It's tough on our service members deployed, and maybe even tougher on the families when they're away.
I agree, Tom, and I think, you know, everyone can define the true meaning of Christmas differently, but I think one thing that unifies all of us is the topic of hope, the belief that the future is going to be better than the present, that you've got, you know, a hand in making that so. And if you've got it, Christmas can be more meaningful for you. And without it, the despair and you know, the cycle of apathy and hopelessness will continue. So, you know, for those that are deployed, I think there's a tension between desperately missing their loved ones and wanting to be home and to partake in those traditions and the feeling of guilt that you're not there. But that's also up against the fact that you've got a mission and you're focused on that mission and you're surrounded by battle buddies, people that you don't even realize it at the time, but you're growing in your affection, your fraternal affection for the people on your left and your right that you're there to serve with and get through this job. And for the families back home, you know, there's a similar tension. The spouse or the family that's back home has got to cover down on multiple roles, multiple events for the holidays. And it's hectic. The holidays always are, even more so when your loved one's deployed. And they're missing a crucial member of their family structure. But on the other hand, they've got this tremendous pride in the service of their loved one and really believe they need to finish the job, complete the mission, and safely make it back home. So we're all dealing with that all the time in the holiday season.
Chaplain, I think when I first met you, it was November of 2011. You were deployed to Kuwait with the Red Bulls, and we went over there and did a show. And that was the first time that it became clear to me that when our soldiers and airmen from the Minnesota National Guard deploy, chaplains go with them to mission, to take care of our service members that are deployed. But you also had some chaplains back here at home that were helping the families.
Yeah, it's a team effort, Tom. If I'm an aircraft fueler and I don't have a UH-60 to put gas into, I'm not really doing my job. Chaplains don't have that problem. Everywhere we go, at home or overseas, where we see soldiers and airmen, we have work to do, and without the critical communication component, we can't coordinate efforts. So we've had tremendous leadership to help us see that reality and to make it so to the benefit of our soldiers, airmen, and families.
And of course, as we said, I think that same year I met Chaplain Hokanen, who was back here ministering to the families, and it's almost, to some respects, harder for the families to go through the holidays with a loved one being deployed halfway around the world.
Absolutely, no question about it. And for the full-time staff that doesn't deploy, people like Vince and other full-timers, you know, to the families, you can't do enough. And to those who are deployed, thinking back, they think you've got a vacation while they're overworking hard. And neither one of those is true. The backbone of the deployment is the family and their support, as well as the full-time staff that's running the show while people are deployed forward, knowing that their day could come soon as well.
Chaplain, we're just about out of time for this first segment. When we come back, we're going to be joined by a special guest, and we're going to talk about resilience, communications, faith, and hope. And I know faith, love, and hope is high on your list of things you want to talk about today, Chaplain. So please stay with us. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and you've joined us today for our annual Chaplain's Christmas Show. And my co-host for this show is Chaplain Lieutenant Colonel Buddy Wynn. And Chaplain, we're off to a pretty good start, and we've got a special guest joining us today, retired Navy Captain Arv Chauncey. Captain, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. It's my pleasure to be here today.
Chaplain, I think you know we had the captain on last February. He was an officer in the military flying in Vietnam, and he had a bad day on May 31st, 1967, but he had a really good day on March 4th, 1973. Captain, can you tell us what happened?
Well, on that particular day, back in May of 67, Tom, I was on my 57th combat mission and had the misfortune to end up being shot down and spending the next 5 years and 9 months as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam.
And Captain, Chaplain and I are both just pleased to have you joining us for Christmas 2016 here in the studios. But we want to talk a little bit about resiliency and communications, faith, hope, those type of things. And I know that on May 31st, 1967, after you hit the ground, things weren't very pleasant, and you took your first beating, didn't you?
Yes, that's true. When we were first captured, usually the local people were quite angry and took it out on us in all forms of punishment and beatings and sticks and rocks and things of that nature. So it was not a pleasant experience at all at the beginning of our capture.
And Captain, how long did it take you to get to your first camp, your prisoner camp?
It was approximately 3 days before I was taken from up in the northern part of North Vietnam to Hanoi, where I started my imprisonment.
And you were alone?
I was alone in solitary for probably the first month and a half.
And did you think there were other Americans anywhere near you?
The first few days, I did not know. And then after probably 3 weeks or so, I knew other Americans were in the area, but there was no way to communicate, and I knew of no method of communication to get in touch with any of those people at the time.
So as those years passed, you quickly found out that there was a method to communicate.
Yes. Several months after I was captured, I and my roommate, an Air Force captain, did find out how to communicate, and we called it the TAP code. It was an old code that came from Civil War period that one of our fellow POWs remembered, and it was our primary method, tapping on the walls to communicate and set up our organization.
And the guards didn't want you to communicate at all?
No. The guards, the philosophy of the Vietnamese was if they could have put us all in an individual closet and had no contact at all with any other American prisoner, that's what they would like to have done. But we had to overcome that so we could organize and get, and the communication system was the primary way we did that, the TAP code.
And because you found a way to communicate, you were also able to find out who the senior officer or who the senior prisoner of war was.
Yes. One of the things we always did, if you had a common wall and we could tap on the wall and communicate, was to pass the names of all the other POWs that were in the system. And we knew who the senior officer was. We knew our date of ranks and probably knew at least date of rank senior down through three people. Hmm. In case our senior officer was taken away by the Vietnamese for some kind of punishment to try to destroy our organization.
So it was really important to have that communication and the leadership within the group that was in each prisoner of war camp?
Absolutely. If no communication, you would not be able to form any organization or do anything together. So that was the key, to have the ability to covertly communicate.
Captain, I read you wrote part of your own, for the POW network, your own bio, and you had said that in the weeks and months and years after you were captured, you learned about life, you dreamed of a new life someday, realized that all you had lost and all that you had so easily taken for granted had been taken away from you, and above all, you knew that beside the precious gift of life, the fact that you were born an American ran close to second to that first God-given blessing. And you were praying to be given the chance to return to this wonderful land, its people, its ideals, its freedoms, and its opportunities. So you had faith to help carry you through as well.
Absolutely. Especially during those periods of solitary confinement, when you had nobody else to share a cell or a room with you, looking for faith and having just something to turn to give you confidence and to pray, it was a great help.
We're speaking with retired Navy Captain Arv Chauncey on Minnesota Military Radio. Chaplain, you had something to add?
Captain Chauncey, what a tremendous privilege to have you here today and to speak with you. I would imagine that you're really in reaction mode when you're shot down. You find that you survived, and now you're being pursued or perhaps accosted by locals. At what point did faith take over? Did that become a reality for you, something that you were leaning on to sustain your hope? And what did that look like for you?
I think the first, the biggest experience to answer that question, Chaplain, is at one point when my captives were, in effect, making life miserable for me, they had me kneeling down and a fellow walked up and put a machete on the back of my neck, and I actually thought that this was going to be the end of my life. And at that point, I started to pray, and I started to say the Lord's Prayer. And that just brings it home to me now when I reflect back that if a person thinks they're about to be killed or lose their life, they're going to turn to God or they're going to turn to their mother, ask for help from somebody. And I certainly did.
So that cry for a divine intervention, that prayer that you offered at that time, the sacred words, whether spoken or thought and processed, maybe didn't deliver you from the hand of your captor, but it got you through for that day. And it seems to me that that was a theme for you throughout your captivity.
Absolutely. And other times during the first week when they were actually torturing us for military information, I found that I would turn to trying to remember psalms and prayers that under extreme traumatic conditions, there was nothing else to do. I would ask for help, and I would try to recite those things dealing with the pain and things that I was going through at the time.
Well, we appreciate how that continues to inspire to this day.
Captain, before you were deployed to Vietnam on that mission, I know you were married and had two boys. When you were in the POW camp, were you able to keep track of days? Did you know when the holidays like Christmas were coming?
Yes. Not right away. At first, you're so confused, and it's such a traumatic experience to deal with. But probably 2 or 3 months later, after I was in a camp and we had communication tapping on the walls covertly, people had been taken to interrogation and had caught up from a newspaper or something in that room on the date. And we were able to then continue just every day. You just advance the calendar. And from that time on, I always knew what the date was, and I knew when Christmas or Thanksgiving or something was approaching.
Captain, how tough was Christmas in the prisoner of war camp?
The answer to that, Tom, really is I have to put it into two phases. During the early years, when there was just maybe one or two of us in a room, Christmas was very trying. It was a time when you would try to compartmentalize your family to the side and not think about them. You just couldn't make it through all that time if you dwelled on thinking of your family. But when it became Christmas, there was no way you couldn't think about your family. So during those first few years, it was tough. Then after, in the 1970, after a commando raid, the Sante raid, we had 40, 50 people in a room together. And that's when we really got organized and would have an actual Christmas ceremony of our own. We would designate a chaplain, somebody who remembered scriptures. We'd have a small choir, and we would, to our best ability, perform a Christmas service in that room. But still, it hurt if you had to think about your family because you knew you couldn't get home, you couldn't have all the wonderful things that we always have here at Christmas.
And the memories of Christmas past all came flowing in.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that's just what they wanted to torture you with, isn't it?
Yes, they did, and they went out of their way. Sometimes they would even play music through speakers that they had up in the ceiling that would be Christmas carols and things that, I mean, it was wonderful to hear it, but at the same time, you couldn't help but feel somewhat sad because you knew you weren't going to be with your family and you couldn't really celebrate Christmas the way you wanted to.
Thank you, Captain. We have to take a short break. We're speaking with Chaplain Buddy Nguyen and Captain Arv Chauncey on Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back.
Said the night wind to the little lamb.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and as we've told you several times today, this is our annual Chaplain's Christmas Show, and my co-host for the show is Chaplain Lieutenant Colonel Buddy Nguyen. And Chaplain, our special guest on the show today has been retired Navy Captain Arv Chauncey. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly message from the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Larry Shelletoe.
The show this week will have special meaning for many veterans. We'll be visiting with the chaplains who have served our soldiers while they were in combat. As every combat vet knows, with those experiences, we bring back memories and feelings that we must deal with. This is very, very important that we reach out to all veterans and thank them for their service. And to all veterans who have been there, done that, I will say to you, as I say to many others, this too, while you'll never forget it, is something that we will deal with We will understand, and we will continue to reach out and help each other. The best thing all veterans can do is take care of their fellow veterans and care for their families and live the life that we've been allowed to live following our experiences. God bless you. Have a great day.
Thank you, Commissioner Chalideau. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Captain, welcome back to the show. When we went off the air in the second segment, we were talking about the travails of being a prisoner of war and how tough it was on you to experience Christmases in captivity, because as hard as you tried, thinking about your family and Christmases past just flows into your memory. You couldn't block it out, could you?
No, we couldn't. And Chris, there's another aspect of Christmas, too, that played a big part of our resisting and surviving there, and that was the fact that we seemed to put the year into six-month increments, always thinking, well, we'll be home by next Christmas. We'll be home by next Christmas. We'll be home by next summer. So that was another aspect of that. When Christmas arrived and departed and we didn't go home, it was sort of a downer. So that was another big thing, that it was part of our six-month that we kept thinking, okay, we're going to go home in 6 months. But, of course, it finally happened, but it took, in my case, almost 6 years to happen, six Christmases.
Long time in captivity, Captain. You were telling me earlier that you were able to keep track of the calendar, and you kind of knew when the holidays or any holiday was coming up, July 4th or Thanksgiving or Christmas, and you got a little better food on those days?
We did. The Vietnamese normally gave us two meals a day. I'll give them credit for that. They weren't very good. You wouldn't have touched it if it was brought to you right here. But bottom line, they fed us twice a day, a watery soup. But on Christmas, New Year's, 4th of July, Tet, their holiday or their special days, we called it a BFD, you know, a big fine deal. And we always looked forward, excuse me, we always looked forward to getting a little bit better food on that day. There never was much to fill you up, enough to fill you up, but it was a better quality food, maybe even a few little pieces of hard candy.
Well, what your captors were trying to do was just kind of rub it in that this is a holiday and you're not free.
Yes, that's true. And probably in one of the camps, they were even using it for propaganda. They'd film somebody eating and then say, well, this is how we feed them all the time, which was not true.
The captain, as you got into your fifth and then into your sixth year of captivity, did the bombing change a little bit? Were you getting signals? Were you thinking the time has come where you might be going home?
Yes. In the Christmas of 1972, they had moved 208 of us up near the Chinese border, and I just happened to be the senior officer in a building that had about 20 other fellow POWs, and I was taken to interrogation one evening. And not knowing what was going on in Hanoi, way to our south, the interrogator started slamming on the table and screaming at me about Nixon is bombing Hanoi with B-52s at Christmas. And quite honestly, as horrible as that sounds, I was elated because I knew that was going to bring the war to an end, and I couldn't wait to get back to the building and tell the rest of my fellow POWs what was going on, because that would really give us some hope.
And then the day you were given new life was the March 4th, 1973. Pretty important day.
Yeah, that was a day, a very emotional day that we marched out of that Hanoi Hilton and got on a bus and drove out to Gia Lam Airport. And I'll never forget seeing that tail with an American flag on it. And there wasn't a dry eye on the bus. Finally walked out and saluted to an Air Force colonel standing there in his uniform and took us out to that airplane and rolled out on the runway, and when the power went up, we just all went wild spontaneously, and we were on our way to the Philippines to start our journey back home, and it was just amazingly wonderful.
Kind of a silly question, but do you remember the first good meal that you ate?
Oh, do I ever. It was at the galley at the at Clark Air Force Base, and I was in the second group. The first group, when they arrived, they had baby food waiting for them because they thought we would be Auschwitz cases, couldn't eat solid food. Of course, it didn't take long for the guys to start yelling, where's the steak and eggs? I was in the second group, and obviously when I got there, steak, eggs, corn on the cob, ice cream, it was amazing. Just amazing to have good food and all you wanted.
After 6 years.
Yes.
My goodness.
This is Minnesota Military Radio, and my guests today are Chaplain Buddy Wynn and retired Navy Captain Arv Chauncey. Captain, I want to ask you, for 6 years, you had to suffer through holidays and you weren't with your family, and you had a lot of time to think because you were in those little cages and those little rooms. Has that affected your view of the holiday season for since the day you came back to life in March of 1973?
I'm sure it has. I'm sure that Christmas means more to me now than it would have if I had not have had that bad experience. And especially I remember my first Christmas home, my wife and I going to a Christmas ceremony on Christmas Eve, and it was really emotional. I was really moved by the entire service, and departing the church that evening, told the pastor that this was my first Christmas service in 6 years, and I just couldn't thank him enough for how wonderful it was. So I know it has, over the years, it's really influenced me in how I look at Christmas and how special it is.
Great time to spend with your sons and your grandchildren.
Absolutely. Right. My four sons and three grandchildren. It's just wonderful.
Chaplain?
Captain Chauncey, adjusting to life after war is very difficult for everyone, for families, for those that have come home. And after 6 years in captivity, it's beyond comprehension for the average person. In my life since deployment, you know, I found that I look back to what I've endured, what I've experienced, the hardships. And I'm curious for you, how has that experience in captivity informed your life in difficult times, you know, post-war, when it's been easier to quit or to give up? How has that inspired you or kept you going?
I guess the biggest thing I could answer to that, Chaplain, is the fact that things that, let's say before I went through that experience being in prison, that I might have thought were world importance or something huge in my life, now, after that experience, I realize that there's so many more things that are more important, and those things were just little, if that's clear to you what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, it gives you a whole different perspective, and you realize that just an everyday meal, I still enjoy fried eggs in the morning like you cannot believe, the food that I miss the most. So little things like that probably the average person never thinks of. Never thinks of it.
So in other words, your adversity really helps you to learn what truly matters and really what you truly believe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And mostly, just don't take anything for granted.
Amen. Well spoken.
So, Captain, do you think that's allowed you to maybe not worry about some things that the average person worries about because you were deprived of so much for 6 years?
I'm not sure, Tom, because I'm kind of a worrywart person, so... If my wife was here, she'd probably say, no, he worries about too many little things. But I do have it all in perspective, I think. But I think I do keep things more balanced, more in perspective after having had that experience.
Well, gentlemen, we're just about out of time for this segment. We're speaking with our Minnesota National Guard full-time chaplain, Buddy Wynn, and retired Navy Captain Arv Chauncey on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and this is our annual Chaplain's Christmas Show. And, of course, we've got our full-time Minnesota National Guard Chaplain, Lieutenant Colonel Buddy Wynn. Got to get it right, sir. Chaplain, Lieutenant Colonel, I've got it.
Forgotten country.
And our special guest today has been retired Navy Captain Arv Chauncey. Gentlemen, we found a Christmas poem that we wanted to play at the beginning of this fourth segment. And this poem was written by James Schmidt in 1986 when he was a Lance Corporal stationed at the Marine Barracks in Washington, D.C. He wrote the poem to hang on the door of the gym in the enlisted quarters. And when his commanding officer saw the poem, he immediately had copies sent throughout the barracks and promptly dismissed the entire battalion for early Christmas leave. This version of it was recorded under the title A Soldier's Silent Night by Father Ted Burnt as a tribute to Mr. Schmidt. And so we want to play that for you right now, A Soldier's Silent Night.
It was the night before Christmas. He lived all alone in a one-bedroom house made of plaster and stone. I had come down the chimney with presents to give and to see just who in this dwelling did live. A I looked all around, a strange sight to see. No tinsel, no presents, not even a tree. No stockings on the mantel, just boots filled with sand. On the wall hung pictures of far distant lands. Medals and badges, awards of every kind. A sobering thought came alive in my mind. This house was different. It was dark, it was dreary. I had found the home of a soldier. I could see that most clearly. The soldier lay sleeping, silent, alone, curled up on the floor in this one-bedroom home. His face was so gentle, the room in such disorder, not at all how I pictured a United States soldier. Was this the hero of whom I'd just read, curled up on a poncho, the floor for a bed? Then I realized the other families that I saw this night owed their lives to soldiers who were willing to fight. In the morning round the world, children would play. Grown-ups would celebrate a bright Christmas day. But they all enjoy freedom each month of the year because of soldiers like the one lying here. I couldn't help but wonder how many lay alone on a cold Christmas Eve in lands far from home. The very thought put a tear to my eye. I dropped to my knees and I started to cry. The soldier awakened. I heard his rough voice. Santa, don't cry. This life is my choice. I fight for freedom. I don't ask for more. My life is my God, my country, my core. The soldier rolled over and drifted to sleep. But I couldn't control it, and I continued to weep. I kept watch for hours, so silent and still, as both of us shivered from the cold night's chill. I didn't want to leave him on that cold, dark night, this guardian of honor, so willing to fight. Then the soldier rolled over with a voice soft and pure. He whispered, "Carry on, Santa. It's Christmas Day, all secure." One look at my watch, I knew he was right. Merry Christmas, my friend. May God bless you this night.
A Soldier's Silent Night by James Schmidt. Captain, I thought that was kind of a moving poem, and it probably reminded you of some of those days in the cell.
That was really moving. I can't say anything more. That was just exceptionally moving.
Chaplain, you've been deployed before with many soldiers, and it had to have a special meaning for you.
You know, the part of the poem that sticks out to me is really the theme that, you know, we've chosen this life, for better or for worse. You know, we kind of knew what we were getting into when we raised our hand. The reasons for serving over time may change, but ultimately we know that there's going to be some hard realities about, you know, the calling to service on behalf of other people. So, you know, even if it's not me, if it's not Captain Chauncey, if it's not you, Tom, our Vietnam vet, somebody's going to step up and be on the line to continue to preserve freedom.
And here in the United States, so few of us serve these days, but we serve so that the most of us can enjoy the wonderful country and all of the great things that are available here and the freedom and democracy we have in the United States.
That's right. And so many wonderful things to come home to that we just don't want to take for granted.
Chaplain, you've been good. I know I tease you once in a while. This is a Minnesota Military Public Affairs program, but on Christmas, it's a Christmas show, and I know that you've got some thoughts for us about Christmas and this time of year, and it's all yours, sir.
Tom, thank you. And I started, you know, working on this the day after our last Christmas show last year, and so I've had a year you know, to condense a word of encouragement and hope for the audience. And before I share what I want to share, it's important that we stop as we enter the holiday season and we approach a new year. On behalf of the Adjutant General, Major General Richard Nash, the Minnesota National Guard, to reflect on the past year, remembering that many of our soldiers and airmen are deployed forward in support of our nation's demands. General Nash would not let this moment pass without thanking every Minnesota National Guard family member for what is an untiring commitment in providing support to our Guard members, because without their support, we all know this success in the mission wouldn't be possible. He would also ask each of us to take a moment to stop and reflect, be present, look back on the last year, reflect on the challenges that we've undertaken, the great memories that we've created with the people for whom we serve and those with whom we serve, and continue to build towards our future. He would encourage us to cherish our loved ones. Great opportunity to speak with Captain Chauncey, my good friend Tom, and the chance we've had to work together and remember those in our military family who are away. And he wishes all of us a happy, blessed, and safe holiday season. One of the consistent themes that we've heard in our time together today from our honored guest, Captain Arv Chauncey, is hope. And I'd like to expand on that a little bit. You know, this is an absolutely amazing, a tremendous story about resilience, about post-traumatic growth, and the things that can be following war, following an arduous captivity for 6 years, unimaginable to someone who hasn't been through it. And it's a story of hope. It's about never giving up, no matter how bad it gets. This is someone who's been shot down. He survived that ordeal. The training to get him in the cockpit to fly combat missions, 57, unbelievably bad weather, bombings, interrogations, despair and uncertainty, meager rations, almost undigestible, beatings, and the list goes on and on and on. And yet, he's here with us today, and that didn't happen by accident. I'm a chaplain, I'm a preacher, so I'm going to talk about, you know, my perspective. From a biblical definition, hope can be considered a confident expectation about the future. So to have biblical hope is to have this sure and certain anchor of your soul, no matter the circumstances. Divine hope has enabled humanity to survive and even thrive under the most arduous circumstances for all of time. And faith can't exist without hope. In fact, faith is made up of, it's a substance of things hoped for. We have faith that we can trust God in our lives. There are passages throughout Scripture that remind the reader that God will never leave us. He'll never forsake us. Nothing could separate us from His love. And for people of faith in the Christian community, they believe that they can accomplish all things through Christ who strengthens them. These aren't just platitudes. This is the foundation for moving forward under adversity. Now, there are those without hope who come to the point of despair. They feel like ending it all. And the numbers don't lie. Mental health and substance abuse disorders among veterans since 2001 are up consistently. The age-adjusted national suicide rate in 2014 was 25% higher than it was in 1999, according to the CDC. Veterans accounted in 2010 for 20% of all deaths by suicide, but they only represented 10% of the U.S. adult population. So now we have anywhere from 20 to 22 veterans taking their life every day. So the University of Oklahoma looked at this topic of hope, and they confirmed that, you know, this isn't rocket science, but we all want to flourish. And in America, that's life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I think we could agree on that. And they came up with a hope theory, saying that hope requires the ability to create credible mental strategies to achieve goals and the ability to direct and maintain mental energy to these pursuits. So hope is the belief that the present, the future will be better than the present, that you have both the willpower and the way power to make that so. And the will without a way is just a wish. So you've got to have something tangible to put behind your stated belief to bring it to be. If you're a person without hope, likely you lack a sense of purpose, you're blocked from your goals, you approach goals even with negative emotion, and you focus on your failures, not your achievements. People that are without hope have a higher likelihood of quitting their goals, those pursuits. They experience higher anxiety and depression, lower self-esteem. And this is how it typically goes. You start out with hope, but then you experience anger or even rage when your goal is blocked or not met. So then you're unable to adjust to the goal. And without a pathway, you become apathetic or hopeless and you lose motivation. This can be in your job. This can be in your personal finances. It's almost certainly in your relationships, as we know. And it could be in your physical health. On the other hand, those with hope, Tom, these are people who can adapt consistently to their constantly changing environment. And this hope This belief that the future can be better than the present is a buffer for stressful life events. If you've got hope, you experience improved social, psychological, and physical well-being across the span of their lives. So Tulsa looked at 15 million kids who are exposed to domestic violence. They took a study of them, a certain sense of them. These are kids who are at risk for emotional and social and behavioral difficulties because of the stress of repeated trauma, right? These are kids who have increased anxiety, depression, aggression, and violence, criminal behavior, all the telltale signs that their future is not going to be better than the present. And they exposed them to hope. They studied these kids. They sent them to Camp Hope is what they call it. These kids who were exposed to hope experienced higher energy levels. They had a zest and a zeal for life. They demonstrated greater perseverance. They found an ability to self-regulate their emotions and their behaviors. They expected the future to hold positive possibilities. So they had this increased amount of optimism. They had an appreciation towards others and an enhanced sense of gratitude and awareness of the feelings and motivations of others, which is an improved social intelligence. In other words, this hope produces positive character development. And this is the positive tool that we have to push back, particularly for veterans, against the oppression of apathy and depression and substance abuse and suicide. So this is the good word. If you think your best days are behind you, I've got news for you. They're in front of you if you choose for them to be. In other words, if you take the quote of the great philosopher and psychotherapist Viktor Frankl, he said, "No one can take from you the last of the great human freedoms, which is the ability to choose how you're going to respond to any given set of circumstances." So if I could, Tom, I'd like to just offer a prayer on behalf of all of our listeners and veterans and their families everywhere. I pray this year, Lord, that this would be a season and a time when listeners can reconnect with that which gives them hope in their spirit, their soul, and their body, and to engage healthy pathways for them to pursue their goals. I pray, Lord, that they have the courage to reach out to a battle buddy, to arm themselves with the knowledge about hope, so that when someone looks to them or reaches out to them, that they have the means to bring validation, encouragement, and love consistent with this most wonderful time of the year. Thank you, Lord, for the sacrifice represented in those who wear the uniforms, and particularly their families. I pray that you continue to heal and comfort our Gold Star families, and may our nation, with its flaws and shortcomings, be the standard bearer and the beacon of hope to the world, not because humanity is great, but because the foundations of our nation are great and largely founded upon divine precept. And may we as a nation continue to look to you as the one who binds up our wounds, heals us, and serves as the unlimited source of our hope. Amen.
Thank you, Chaplain. Great message at Christmas time and the story of faith, love, and hope. Chaplain, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Captain Chauncey, we're just about out of time. I appreciate you coming into the studio and sharing your story with us today. Any final thoughts?
My pleasure, Tom, and I'd just like to take the time to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
The same to you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, retired Navy Captain Arv Chauncey, Chaplain Lieutenant Colonel Buddy Wynn, Commissioner Larry Shelledo of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we speak to Congressman Tom Emmer about veterans legislation and get an update from our Ramsey County Veteran Service Officer on the Veteran Court Mentorship Program. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, wishing you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and hoping that you can make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.